Hey, it's Jason Rantz here. Looking to shed pounds safely? Follow my lead and secure your free consultation over at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. They've uncovered the secret to losing up to a pound of fat a day. Their program prioritizes rapid weight loss and a metabolism reset without injections or drugs. With their dedicated staff offering unwavering support, you can reach your weight loss goals. From personal success, they not only help me reach my weight goals, but also maintain them. It's not just a program. It is a lasting lifestyle change. Learn more at EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com.
Dr. Ryan Coogan, D.C. Results may vary.
No! The yellow light!
God, I'm walking here! I'm walking!
Good afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live audio and video on the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, you should download it immediately. President Joe Biden continues to turn on Israel. It's quite the betrayal. So here's a question. Is there room in the Democratic Party for Jews? It's what's trending.
What's trending? International.
I asked that question in part because I got that direct question this morning on Fox Business. And my basic answer was, yes, but it's getting smaller. The amount of room for Jews in the party is getting smaller because the progressive movement is getting larger. Or at least they're getting louder and presenting as if they're larger. And I have to assume they're getting larger because how else do you explain Chuck Schumer, who's Jewish, betraying Israel and Jews the way that he did the other day with his speech calling for new elections? How else do you explain someone like that and all the other Democrats who used to be pretty good on Israel, all of a sudden shifting, changing? How do you explain the difference from what Joe Biden is doing here? Now, he's doing it politically, right? I mean, this is all about politics. He wants to make sure that he keeps these voters. But those are voters within his party. And if this was a truly small group of people, if this were, for example, the activists who say MAPS, do you remember that?
Vaguely, yeah.
What was it?
I was like minor attracted persons.
Yeah. Like, okay. Now, if that was a larger group, I bet you they'd be talking a little bit differently, even though it's disgusting as being anti-Jewish. Like it's in that category of, yeah, you're a horrible person. Get away from me. I want nothing to do with you. But it's a small group of people, right? What do? They don't even acknowledge that it's there because it's just crazy. They don't care. Okay, so the MAPS won't vote for me. Well, we're going to lose 17 people and they're all college professors at Evergreen. Like, I'm kind of right. Like, that's what this is about. He knows that it's growing. And so he's trying to placate them, even though I still don't believe he believes what it is he's saying. But during this Univision interview, which has gone on now for what, a month and a half? It feels like they've been rolling out clips from this interview for a month.
It does feel that way.
It's so long. But he, again, called out Benjamin Netanyahu.
I think what he's doing is a mistake. It's outrageous that those three vehicles were hit by drones and taken out on a highway where it wasn't like it was along the shore.
Okay, well, thank you. He's talking about the aid workers. It's kind of hard to tell if he even knows what he's talking about because he always seems so tired. We explained this yesterday. He chooses to ignore it. He chooses to ignore it for political gain. Remember, a drone unit saw a Hamas terrorist climb into a truck, fire a weapon in the air. It is a common signal to other Hamas fighters the location of one of their anti-Jewish buddies. Now, they were going to drone it, but they decided not to because they could not confirm whether or not it was near any of the aid workers that were nearby. They made phone calls, quite literally, to the aid group. Is that you? They didn't answer the phone. And so they chose not to do anything in that moment. Then the different trucks all started to go elsewhere. The convoy broke up. And the drone stayed with one of the trucks that they believe came from or had that Hamas fighter in it. They go into a hangar, and they couldn't see because of the angle of their drone plus the hangar and everything around it. They couldn't see inside. So they couldn't confirm 100% what was going on. But then one of the trucks left, and then another and another and another. And they thought it was the original ones that they were tracking. They screwed up and it cost people their lives. Unfortunately, this happens in war. But this was not like some intentional attempt to kill aid workers. Why would Israel do that again?
Yeah, I mean, and they've been working with this group for like 6 months. Yeah. So
what would be the intent there? I know you guys think on the hardcore left, or I suppose the hardcore right, it seems more about the hardcore left. I get that their argument is that they don't care. They're just committing a genocide, right? Okay. You know, if they were committing a genocide, they would have all been genocided by now. Like, there would not be a Gaza. Gaza's not big. Gaza's what? About the size of Seattle, actually.
Yeah.
It's not large. It's not large.
And they have complete air supremacy. So.
Yes. So tell me again how this is about genocide? Or are Jews really inefficient? Because my people are pretty efficient, I would say. It is absurd. It doesn't make any sense. But again, he's leaning into that because he thinks it's going to help him. And maybe it will. I don't know. I don't get the sense right now it's going to help him. He's going to have to escalate and escalate and escalate. And then maybe when he screams from the river to the sea, these uncommitted voters will go ahead and say, okay, he's one of us now. But Cornel West, he's not buying it. He's running for president. He will get 0.003% of the vote, and maybe it'll matter in a state that he can even get on a ballot on. That's already close. But he called out the sudden change of rhetoric from Biden.
When you have precious babies and grandmothers being killed, and all you can do is come up with an electoral political tactic.
Just real quickly, and I'll let him finish. When you have babies being killed in kibbutzes, when you have women being raped and grandmas being kidnapped, and everyone else they can murdered, where were y'all? Because I remember on October 8, going to Kirkland and seeing all the pro-Hamas people celebrating. Finally, they push back against those evil oppressors in Israel. That's what I remember. Where were you? That's odd. I didn't hear anybody saying, oh my God, this was senseless. I heard a lot of justification.
And start moving slowly because of votes. That says something about your lack of a moral fiber.
Ditto.
You should be concerned about the suffering, not just your votes in the next election. So Biden is certainly moving, but it's a political Machiavellian move. Where's the moral fiber? He's the one talking about we're going to redeem the soul of the nation. That's the slogan of Martin King. Don't steal Martin King's language and then act as if you're just another Machiavellian politician. Those are precious human beings who are dying. And
I might have missed the part of that speech, the I Have a Dream speech, in which he said, I have a dream that all Jews are exterminated. I feel like I missed that part, but they kind of are siding with that as an idea.
It was in the fine print, I think.
Was it? Okay, that didn't make the final speech. It was in one of the early drafts. This is so odd coming from people who have zero compassion for Jews, like none whatsoever. No compassion for the Jews. In all of this, maybe you cut it out. Was he all like, and by the way, just so I am at least showing a heart, can we release the hostages? Did you do any of that? Did you cut it out?
No. I didn't cut it, no.
Okay. I'm just, you know, I'm making sure. I never know. I don't always check your work. You could be cutting out all the goods. He could have been at the end of this and said, just kidding. If I really meant that, boy, would I be a horrible person. And no one should vote for me if I actually held these views. Just kidding. Just joshing you. No, didn't say that. Ironically, I agree with what he said of Biden. I think that's 100% what Biden is doing. He's right. And, you know, one of the questions that came up this morning was like, who benefits from this? It's certain, obviously, Jewish voters within the Democratic Party don't benefit. I said, you're right. Republicans benefit from this because you've got another group of pretty reliable Democrat voters and who vote in large numbers, seeing for the first time, some of them, what their party has become. And is this going to impact this current race? No, it won't. Jews live in New York, LA, very liberal places that their vote is just one of, a billion votes, including all the dead people. And, you know, it's not going to be enough at this point. But can this start shifting over time the way that the vote has shifted with Latinos? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I know, you know, part of the reason why it never really stuck when the left tried to claim that Trump was anti-Semitic, he certainly misspoke a few times. I'm not going to say otherwise, but they claim he's anti-Semitic. Despite the whole Jared Kushner thing, I mean, maybe he just hates his own, you know, family.
And his daughter converted.
So. Yeah. Well, he disowned that daughter, right? Oh, no, that was not Tiffany. You remember what he did with Jerusalem?
He made it the embassy. Yeah, okay.
You remember how everyone was fighting to do that on, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, and he was the one who got it done?
I think they named a train station after him.
Yeah, they kind of like him there. So it's a little bit difficult to claim the people in Israel like him, but he's still an anti-Semite. Like, ugh, really? That's what we're doing here? But it never really stuck. And he made a point, we're not going to get into it, but he said something about not being a good Jew or having not being loyal to your religion and your God if you're a Democrat and a Jew, something along those lines. He's 100% correct. Sorry, I kind of agree with him on that. If you're someone like from the Jewish Voices for Peace, and God bless Maxima, who was on the show last week, who I asked her this question from the Jewish Federation of Seattle, like, how do you characterize Jewish Voice for Peace members? And she pointed out very rightly, and we pointed this out too, I think I actually said it, these are not bar mitzvah activists. They're probably not even Jewish. A lot of them are not Jewish. In fact, I know a lot of them are not Jewish because I'm going to stereotype a bit. Don't usually see many, quote unquote, people of color who are, you know, black or Latino being Jews. They're just generally not. Every once in a while, yes, and maybe they all converted.
Sammy Davis Jr., he was.
Okay. But for the most part, it's just like, no, and I recognize some of you folks. You know, I've got Judar too. You're not a Jew. I can spot a Gentile a mile away. I'm going to stop before I get in trouble. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Legal.
Progressives are losing it here in Washington State after a judge out of Cowlitz County determined a ban on so-called high-capacity magazines was unconstitutional. He used the recent Bruin decision from the U.S. Supreme Court to guide his decision. The state Supreme Court immediately put it on hold, and they're going to take on this issue next. The case came out of a gun shop in Kelso, Gator's Guns, and it was represented from the start by our friend Pete Serrano, who is not only with the Silent Majority Foundation, but he's also the Republican who's running for Attorney General here in Washington State, and he joins me now. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me again.
You know, I was reading today, and we talked about it a little bit earlier on in the show. Danny Westnead in the Seattle Times was writing about this decision. He's very confused. He doesn't understand it. He apparently doesn't understand what an originalist interpretation of the Constitution is. He doesn't understand the Bruin case. So I will let you explain the Bruin decision and why this makes total sense based upon that logic.
Yeah, it all goes back to the common use of the firearms. Now, I will tell you that some folks will limit it to common use in self-defense. But the question is whether or not an arm is commonly used. And typically in self-defense is kind of the following statement there. But I will tell you this. What we have is a judge who's actually looked at the Constitution, looked at the history and the interpretation thereof, and looked at what the Washington State Constitution, back to your point about him being an originalist, looking at what the document itself says, you know, that the right of those who bear arms shall not be impaired or infringed under the Second Amendment. And he actually interpreted it accordingly and said, hey, look, you know, by record, and he cites in one of the footnotes that there were over 2,000 pages of between briefing and information that was submitted that he reviewed. He didn't cite everything verbatim. You know, he only went 55 pages, right? Yeah.
But it was well-argued and very succinct argument, I think.
It was. And he, not only was it well-argued and succinct, but he also broke it down issue by issue, and then federal constitution, state constitution, he kind of jumped back and forth on that issue, and he really laid it out. Back to the point about Bruin is there are, you know, we have the ability as the people to challenge laws, and then the state has the right or duty to defend them. And so this whole common use notion that folks have looked at in Bruin is a little bit overplayed to a degree, because what he did, what Judge Basher did, is he actually looked back at McDonald and Heller and said, hey, look, if this regulation is a ban or a prohibition of a firearm, and he had to analyze whether or not a magazine was, and landed on that it was, in fact, an integral part to a firearm. If it banned it under Heller and McDonald and subsequently under Bruin, that then the ban is unconstitutional. And that's really where it went. And talking about back to the point of common use, a lot of folks will say, because it talks about in Bruin common use for self-defense, you know, there are other great common uses that are fully legal, sports shooting, other recreational purposes, right? And so I love what Judge Basher did. He gave us a roadmap, and I don't mean us as Silent Majority Foundation.
State.
He gave the people of Washington a roadmap of how we can look at what the Constitution means to each one of us and how it protects our rights.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to understand for folks, without us getting too in the weeds, I mean, even just looking at the Heller decision, there is that second sort of prong of the test that you look at, and you look at the reason for enacting the law, whether or not it outweighs the quote-unquote burden created by the restriction. And why that's so important is there are some guns, to your point, that can only be operated with these magazines, which is precisely why in this case he says it is considered part of the gun. It's the same argument with someone trying to ban ammunition. Well, I'm not banning the gun. Yeah, but guns don't work without the ammunition. So that's a part of the actual gun. So even under the Heller decision, I think he's making the right call. But it's very clear under Bruin, which, again, I want to pick on Danny Westney because he's such a dum-dum. He seems to think that they mean literally you have to find the same analog law that has been used historically to regulate. So there's like, well, there didn't even have magazines back then. Yeah, that's it doesn't mean literal. They're saying, can you find anything that is within the realm if there wasn't a direct ability to compare modern technology to back then? And it just doesn't exist, that I've seen at least.
No, I mean, we did talk about, and there were some expert witnesses that talked about the history of firearms and how detachable magazines have existed for quite some time. But I mean, it goes to the point that I always make for folks in your industry. You know, when the First Amendment was written, I'm pretty sure Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and the internet didn't exist. Yet your speech, my speech, at least theoretically, till the current administration, the Biden administration, was protected in those areas, even when we disagreed with the government. You know, and so we still have protected speech in places where there is no historical analog. At least with firearms, there were some similar firearms available, obviously not to the same level of you know, technology that we see today. That's just 200 years of technological advancements.
Yeah, people don't even remember machine guns actually existed way longer than people realize. It's obviously not the same kind of machine gun, but even machine guns existed at a point early on in all of this. You know, what's amusing is, again, in this column saying, well, now as a result of this, if this is to be upheld, well, now we're going to have drones that have machine guns attached to it, because, like, no, that's also not what it means. And I don't know where in God's name he's coming up with this stuff. But, you know, it's going to go in front of the Supreme Court. They did kind of surprisingly agree with Heller, as I recall, correct?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
do you anticipate they might also basically be forced to abide by Bruin here?
I think so. And, you know, look, I know we all knock the state Supreme Court and we have our own questions, but I will tell you, kind of backing up just a bit, the judge in Cowlitz County was also the trial judge in a case called Jorgensen, State v. Jorgensen, or I think it was State v. Jorgensen. And that had to do with an individual who was out, I believe, on recognizance or on bail, and used a firearm, and then, you know, committed further crimes, right? And the Supreme Court upheld Jorgensen in this very, very, very narrow way. And I think, you know, part of Judge Basher's experience of having been a trial judge on that really feeds into what he did with this opinion, which is how well and how thorough he was in it. And again, just circling back to Jorgensen, you know, I think we can all agree there are certain very limited firearms laws, like, you know, don't let dangerous felons have them. It's probably not a bad idea. protects the people of Washington, but to outrightly ban a particular type or magazine mm-hmm. because it could be used for bad. I mean, it's not the gun's intent to be used for bad. At least
exactly.
My guns don't talk back to me. I don't know about yours, but
well, I get some guns that tell me to buy them, but I resist sometimes because I have a budget.
No, I agree. And so, yeah, I do think that the Supreme Court is actually, again, the way Judge Basher wrote this and how analytical he was, not just on the case law, but the facts before him. In my opinion, when the injunction, right now we're dealing with the stay of the injunction, and that's a whole separate issue. But when the injunction gets the meat and the analysis gets before the Supreme Court, I think they're going to have to do their homework if they want to overturn the injunction. As to whether or not we're going to be blessed with the lift of the stay, you know, we're working on that. We've got about another 48 hours mm-hmm. till we have to file our response to their emergency stay.
Is it fair to say you're not holding your breath on that one, given?
No. Yeah. I mean, you know, it is what it is. And I mean, I wish I could say differently, but I think the fair thing for the listener is to hear my perspective. Now, I do think we can analyze it such that there's a reason to lift the stay, but pushing
it's not gonna
out of the grant of the stay.
It's unfortunately not
right?
just not going to happen in this case. Yeah. I wish we were wrong, but the chances are that we're absolutely right. Just to be clear, you think that unless they sort of really do some mental gymnastics, it's going to be hard for the state Supreme Court to overturn this injunction? Because, you know, you hear Bob Ferguson a couple days ago come out and say, this ruling is inconsistent with all the other judges. Well, the other judges didn't have Bruin. And that's the key piece here. We're talking about the Bruin decision, some of which, by the way, some laws that are being contested, not in Washington State, but everywhere, they're still going through the process. And so for him to say that, you know, this judge is the outlier, while it's technically true, it's disingenuous to make that claim because we now have Bruin decision, which is relatively new.
Yeah, I mean, it's disingenuous because, yeah, sure, other district courts on the federal constitutional analysis have disagreed with this judge. But to your point, there's no Bruin analysis in Washington state on this issue or similar, you know, overreaching, you know, global issue on firearms. And so to claim that, you know, this is really a case of first impression for the state Supreme Court. And so, you know, look, they surprised us with taxes and other things like that. So I'm not going to put it past them, but I do mm-hmm. think that the way this is written, the way it's analyzed, the evidence before the court gives a really solid shot to have the court uphold the decision. And the beautiful thing is, again, how the judge down in Talbot County wrote this, Judge Basher, there are separate tracked analyses, and it's the state constitution, the federal constitution, and, you know, if for some reason the state Supreme Court really messes things up, especially on the federal analysis, in this case, it gives us an opportunity to go to the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, there you go. And I mean, ultimately, this is going to be an issue, maybe not this particular case, but this issue will go in front of the Supreme Court because we do have we have enough states that are trying to do this and have done this. And it's just going to take a little bit of time. And that's the unfortunate reality. But I'm glad that you're on this case here in Washington. We're talking with Pete Serrano. Remember, he's running for attorney general. He needs your support. His website is serrano4ag.com. It's all spelled out, serranoforag.com. Pete, thank you so much for stopping by.
Jason, appreciate it. And shout out to my Silent Majority Foundation team. We wouldn't be here without their efforts.
Yeah, you guys are doing great work. Actually, their website, because I forgot, thank you for reminding me, silentmajorityfoundation.org. It's important to also show your support there. Appreciate you stopping by. You're listening to The Jason Rancher. Don't forget, if you owe money to the IRS or you're one of those older cases where they just sent you a form that's starting to threaten the next step, the final step, make sure you go with Greg Nunn. Just Google NUNN, Nunn Better Tax Resolution, and let Greg Nunn help you with your situation. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big book.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson, Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sammamish, Kent, Olympia, Everett.
This is The Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Centralia, Lakewood.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for The Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle and instead focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. There's a story about the new recess law here in Washington State. Como has it. And they decided to look specifically at a school in Issaquah. So technically, we can include it in The Big Local. That's our little cheat. But this is obviously a law that impacts the entire state. That if your kid is in grades kindergarten through fifth, they get guarantee 30 minutes of recess every day. And according to this Como piece, and I'm so glad that they put this together for us, it turns out kids, kindergarten through fifth grade, they absolutely love an extra 30 minutes of recess that's guaranteed a day. Now, they don't dive into whether or not they would like an hour or two or three or four or just to skip school. So I can't with any confidence tell you that, you know, at some point after 30 minutes, you know, does the joy start to you know, ebb a little bit, just a little tiny bit, right? Like, is there a bar? I don't know. It could be. But I'm glad that we found out they like 30 minutes.
If there was no recess ever, that would be horrible for me. If I didn't have...
What is that kid doing all day that it would be horrible for me if I didn't have any... Oh, my God. What is going on with him?
Working in the salt mines.
Right? I mean, you're looking at a word and then you're drawing a line to a definition on a quiz. And the first word is like cat. You know, oh God. You don't know this about me yet because you're still new. Anytime you give me a story about the elderly or young people, I cannot help but be vicious. I can't help it. I try, but I can't help
it. That doesn't surprise me at all.
It is a sickness.
Me. If I didn't have recess, I'd be sad because I'd just be sitting in the class, like, doing math, reading, and, like, writing all day. And that's, like, boring if I don't get any breaks.
Oh, my God. Talk about a kid who's not ready for the real world. I know he's only in, what, second grade or something. But
they're in, like, fourth grade, Jason.
It's like, you know what? This is why the recess bill is such a disaster. Let's just get them used to the misery of, you know, having a full-time job instead of doing this, because clearly this didn't work the way that it was intended based upon the younger generation of workers who now want a work-life imbalance where they don't want to go into the office. They want breaks nonstop and to get paid for it. They want to work considerably less but make considerably more. So we've all been saying, you know, kids need a break. And I generally agree with that. But it hasn't worked. I think we coddle them too much. I think we should make classes longer. Actually, that part I do believe in. School should be longer and not take so many breaks so you're out of school earlier. That's all. Just get it done. And by the way, you don't have to worry about, you know, picking up your kid at 3 p.m. or having extra resources in the community to handle them after school, because school is still going on, and maybe just incorporate all that stuff into the classroom. That would make more sense to me.
I would feel tortured.
What is happening at this school? It's Grand Ridge Elementary. They're torturing kids there?
My brother actually went there.
Did he get mistreated?
Actually, the way he turned out, now I think
right?
about it,
is
maybe
there like
he
a
did.
Lot of resentment every time you say the name of the school, Grand Ridge? He goes, starts to hiss to him.
Because if I have no breaks, then I'll be sitting in class hyperactive with trying to focus.
Oh, God, this poor teacher. Oh, the poor teacher who's got this kid. Something tells me the recess is not getting rid of the hyperactivity. Because I think they're talking to the kids. Did they just show up to the school at Como and just start talking to kids without parental consent?
I'm assuming they had consent.
Was this after school or during
school? It looks like it was during recess.
Right, that's my point. They went to the school during recess and just say, hey, seven-year-old, or however old fourth graders are. How old are fourth graders?
Like nine, usually.
Hey, nine-year-old, get over here. I just need your affirmative consent to film. Yeah, just don't tell mom. They might see it on TV, though. You realize that. Did they at least blur out the faces?
Well, I've been told kids can consent to all sorts of things these days.
That's
true.
So. We did just talk about...
Which, not my thing.
Not my thing. I get it. I get it, kid. Now, it also turns out, because Cuomo wanted to go a little bit deeper into this and see who else would really, really enjoy the idea of getting 30 minutes of guaranteed recess. And it turns out there are paraprofessionals like this next one who's all like, I would love to do less work. 30 minutes a day of less work? Sounds great. You know, again, don't know if they dove deep into whether or not she would want an hour of doing less work. But I do know teachers, and they do like to say that they work 24 hours a day, which they don't, and that they work really every single day of the year, even though they get summers off and spring off and winter break off. But they pretend that they're still, you know, we're doing curriculum. Oh, you download it from the website. Oh, shut up. I'm going to get text messages now from angry paraprofessionals.
Kids are not really meant to just be still all day, right? So they need that for their brains to come out, to move, to have fun. It's so needed.
Okay. You're a paraprofessional, so why don't you leave this to the doctors, okay? We got a doctor here. Why don't you just say, I don't want to deal with these kids the entire day, which, by the way, is a valid point. There is something to be said about, you know, getting rid of some of the hyperactivity. If you do too much, well, then they're not going to be paying attention in class once they get back from recess, right? And is recess always the same time for kids, or do they stagger it just based upon the school? Because if it's too big, you don't want too many kids out?
When I was in elementary school, it was like always the same time.
Yeah, but they were staggered for different... For me, it was staggered. I always had the same time in my grade with other...
Right.
I can't remember
right.
What,
yeah.
Right? That's what they do. But what about, you know, the precocious ones, the entrepreneurial spirited ones who want to hang out with the seniors?
Well, we had gifted programs for them, but I guess we're not anymore, right?
Yeah, well, not in Seattle, at least. So here's a doctor. She's a pediatrician. And she's going to tell us something we've already established long ago, but Cuomo needed to fill an extra 14 seconds in their feature.
It's one of the few times during the day, the school day, and maybe even the whole day, given how structured a lot of children's lives are, where they get to choose what they're doing.
So structured.
And they get to problem solve with their peers and be creative.
So unbelievably structured. Here, kid, here's an iPad. Here's a Kindle Fire. Just watch Dora the Explorer, whatever, kids. What that stupid... dog that's blue. What's that thing?
Blue's Clues?
Blue's Clues. Yeah, here. Watch Blue's Clues. I'm not going to tell you the dog actually died 14 years ago. Well, it bit a kid. They had to put it down. But you can't tell kids that because then they get all sad.
Wasn't it a cartoon?
It's now a cartoon. It used to be a live action.
Blue. Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. I make that up. I made it up. You look like you actually believe me. I feel like that was not sarcastic enough. The Port Angeles School District, they informed their kids, or really the parents of the kids, that, yeah, you're not going to be able to come into school again today. Third day in a row, the Port Angeles Para Educator Association, they are on strike as they are working through a new contract. There was a court order to return to work, but we don't actually enforce anything against teachers' unions or paraeducator unions or really any unions except for police and fire. Everyone else gets to completely ignore the law and ignore a judge and just stay out, all while bilking you of more money. So then they get more money, only to be hit the next year with complaints from the school district that our budget is underwater, we have to make some cuts. And instead of cutting the paraeducators who demanded more pay for less work, they end up cutting music programs, which, if I'm being honest, I don't care about that. But then they'll cut sports, they'll cut art. Man, the art you can get rid of, but not the sports. That's what they end up doing. Here, they end up cutting the academic decathlon. Is that still a thing?
I mean, I was never in it. So.
I was. But,
yeah.
I got 3 gold medals, 2 for speech and 1 for interview. And I probably would have got the second interview one, but I forgot to show up. I didn't know what time it was and I was late. Finally, we now have a date. According to, what was this, King 5, I think? We now have a date for the opening of the In-N-Out that is way too far for any of you to go to who's listening to my voice, unless you happen to be in Vancouver, because this is happening in Ridgefield. I don't know why people clicked on this story the way that they did for the last month and a half. Everyone's super excited who haven't actually had In-N-Out. I'm from Los Angeles. I've had In-N-Out. It's good. I prefer Dick's, actually.
It is good, but I think Dick's probably is a little better.
It's good. It's not bad. It's not drive 3 hours from the Seattle area to get to Ridgefield good. That's like kind of crazy. But we now actually have a date. King 5 promises us that. And the date is, I want a little bit of a drum roll, the date of opening the first In-N-Out in Washington State in a city most people never even heard of is... Come on, give me the ding. Give me the ding. Oh my God, he's hyperactive and he's just... Oh, Duncan, our 11-year-old intern, is doing this. We don't give him recess, so this is his... Come on, just give me the ding. What are you doing? Don't laugh at me. Don't laugh at me. I wasn't ready. And we don't really even have a date. They just said by 2025. What does that mean? Does that mean by the end of 2024 into 2025 or by the end of 2025? It says by 2025.
I think it's intentionally vague.
Right? I'm serious. What did you decide? What did you fall on? Is either by 25 as in the beginning of 2025 or by 2025 some point during 2025 but before 2026?
Given things never open when they're supposed to, I'm going to go with the latter.
Okay, this isn't a Sound Transit project. That's In-N-Out probably will figure this out. What are you landing on? Because I have no clue.
I'll say sometime during 2025, yeah.
So why don't they just say in 2025?
Yeah, otherwise I feel like they would have said by the end of this year, right? So,
But by 2020, that is confusing. It's intentionally confusing. And you know what? This is Jason Tells the Future. Put this down on the sheet. If you don't have access to it, write it, and then I'll send it to you. It is April 10th at 4:43 p.m. King 5, Cairo 7, Fox 13, and Como TV will all do a story on the opening of In-N-Out, and they will be interviewing people who drove from Everett, who drove from Bellevue, who drove from Bremerton, all the way down to this city of Ridgefield to eat an In-N-Out, and they'll say it was so worth it. Oh, making the drive for 3-4 hours, getting in line for 3-4 hours, totally worth it. This is the best burger I've ever had. Instead of what they really want to say is, why did I do this? Why did I just waste my weekend on this? I mean, my God, this was not a smart move. And I'm still hungry, and I'm not getting back in that line. I should have ordered a double-double. And then they'll follow up with a secret menu story. It's not secret if everyone knows it. They just mean it's not listed on the menu in front of you. Other than that, I love it. Congratulations to Ridgefield, and I hope you prosper. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. You get to choose our next story. Story number one. An NPR editor goes after his own outlet, claiming they are way, way, way too left, and now Donald Trump is speaking out. Or story number two. NYPD commissioner is calling migrants ghost criminals. Why? Why is he doing that? Or she, I don't know who it is. It's a commissioner, could be either. Why do they should gender that one? Commission S. I like, well, it's hard to spell, I bet. 1-800-465-8770 for your text. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
You pick the topic on The Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do. And as much as I really like the text that just said, NPR, bash please, it wasn't the number one choice. It was number two. Maybe I'll get through the first one quickly. I have a tendency, and again, you don't know this about me, to when I make a point about how I could probably fit in a second story and you pick the news to make the audience happy, I end up then turning to the producer and needlessly chitter-chatter, eating up all the time that I could have used covering the story that the other people wanted me to cover. And at some point during the chit-chat, I recognize publicly that I'm wasting time in error, but I don't stop. And it just keeps going and going and going. And then I come up with yet another reason why I'm doing it. But then I say, maybe I should stop doing that. I shouldn't do that. I should just get to the story. And then before you know it, I don't even have enough time to do the first story that everyone did want.
I mean, I would want to talk to me too, so.
I mean, I was talking at you. I wasn't talking you. Just, you know. So let's talk about the commissioner, NYPD. His name is Edward Caban. And I guess, was this considered controversial? Because he doubles down on his comments. It's odd. People, I guess, are taking issue that in an interview with NBC News, he used language to discuss illegal immigrants who are violating the law beyond just being in this country illegally. And I guess people are upset.
Right now, most of them had no IDs. There's no way we could tell where they live, where they come from. They're pretty much ghost criminals.
Ghost criminals. Kind of hard at the end to hear it. Yeah, pretty much ghost criminals. Now, what he just said makes total sense. I don't know why anyone would push back at that, or even if people weren't truly upset, and maybe it was the, you know, the anchor, the reporter who said, wait, ghost criminal, what does that mean? Yeah, the ghost criminal, what didn't you understand about this? It's like they don't exist because they don't have paperwork. It's hard to track people who are in this country illegally, who didn't go through a system, don't have like a legal ID or anything that we can use to maybe track down who this person is outside of kind of really old-fashioned police work, where, you know, in this case, you're knocking on doors, you're asking people if they've seen this person, maybe you've got surveillance footage, maybe you don't. There's been a rise, of course, in New York of criminals who are in this country illegally, creating more victims. And, you know, as much as people want to pretend that there are all of these studies that definitively prove that illegal immigrants are less likely than American-born citizens to break the law, number one, they have no proof of that whatsoever. And you read I have a chapter of my book on this, or a sub-chapter in one of the chapters on this very issue. There's no evidence that that is true. I might believe it because I imagine people in this country illegally don't want to bring a whole lot of attention to themselves. And of course, we're talking about crimes in addition to being in this country illegally. But it's not tracked. This isn't tracked. It's kind of like the FBI database on crime. Yeah, LA doesn't report. Philadelphia doesn't report numbers. Like big cities that have horrible crime don't report. So you can't really tell you the truth here. That said, let's just for the sake of argument assume that that is true. They are less likely. So? And? Seriously, I like how they put that argument out there as if it's a valid one. Because my response is, okay, we all acknowledge, we'll just concede, they do not commit as many crimes as American-born citizens. And let's say they, of all the crimes, they represent 10%. And everybody else is 90%. Okay. If they weren't in this country illegally, did the 10% of crimes happen? No? Okay, well, there you go. That's the whole argument. I rest my case, and then I just walk out. I would drop something. I wouldn't have a microphone, so I'd have to drop something, but I would pretend it's a microphone so it makes a noise, because I think it's kind of lame to just do the handout and then drop the imaginary microphone and nothing happens. There's no sound. That's what I would do. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, and
is this controversial? Is the argument, because this is, I mean, if they're really committed, they would come back, well, if they don't commit the crime, then I'm sure a white person would have committed the crime. What? Huh? Why would you make that assumption? Because I don't like white people. No, I got that. But, you know, again, why would you just make that assumption? We would have 10% fewer crimes. And I don't care, frankly, if it was 1%. We would have 1% fewer crimes. How many of the 1% were murders? Would we prefer that we not have these innocent people murdered? Because I would. And maybe on the radical left, you just don't care. Which is why folks on the radical left go out of their way to blur the lines between someone in this country illegally and someone who isn't. They won't say illegal immigrants. And if you pay close attention to folks like Pramila Jayapal, they don't even say undocumented usually. They just say immigrants. That's all they say. That's all they say. This is a party that is anti-immigrant. What? We're the ones saying it should be easier to come into this country legally. We just want to make sure that we're vetting people and we've got some control. That's all. If anything, you're the one who's anti-immigrant. Because not only are you thumbing your nose at immigrants who came here the legal way, you're also putting all these illegal immigrants, not only do they have to go through hell to get into this country illegally, many of them dealing with rape and assault on the way. They're taking advantage of, they're giving all of their money to coyotes to bring them across. That's a miserable journey. So it's kind of odd that you are okay with them getting into that. But number two, once they're in this country illegally, it turns out it's not so easy to just live a life. We can talk to like 240 migrants who are Venezuelan and Angolan in Kent, because I think we're coming up in a couple days. I think Saturday we'll hit the 11 days where their hotel room is gone. They no longer have the money, unless some other benefactor stepped up and gave $50,000 to keep them in a quality inn. Oh my God. I mean, they better not be complaining about a quality inn, but I would. I mean, because I would. I'm not going into a 2.5-star motel. If you have to tell me it's quality in the title, I'm going to assume it's not. Apologies. Am I snobbish? No, I'm a snob. I'm not snobbish. I'm a snob.
I think you're also right.
I am kind of right, let's be honest. 1-800-465-8770. I'm kidding. I love them, sort of. Not really.